Well, it's the guest that I most look forward to once a month now in front of me. And not only that, but she's brought in another very fine lady to talk animals, because we welcome into the studio Hayley Baker, our 105 vet. And she brings along with her a lovely lady called Kerri-Anne Hannigan, who is an animal behaviourist at the practice in Vets for Pets. So welcome to the show, both of you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Now, Hayley, socialisation is, I mean, it all sounds like a very, very sort of, well, it is quite a long word, but a very posh word for bonding with your animals. But actually, I mean, as I have discovered with the adoption of elderly animals and things, it is absolutely vital. And of course, the best time to do this is when they're very young.
Absolutely. It's the single most important thing that you really need to be doing when you get a puppy, when you get a kitten. And that's why I thought it would be something good for us to talk about today, and why I brought Kerri-Anne across, because she's one of our qualified nurses, but she also has this specialty in animal behaviour. And we are, dare I mention the word, coming up towards Christmas.
You can.
I apologise.
The cat
everyone.
Is out of the bag, if you'll pardon the pun. You only need to look on the shelves in the shops to see that they're clearing it away, ready for the glitter.
Oh, dear. And so we do see a surge in puppies and kittens being bought around Christmas time. And there is no problem with that, as long as you are fully aware of what you're taking on and the implications of it. So I thought if we talked about this today, this is preempting things, which is great. Mm. And we can then go from there. So the socialisation is certainly something that Kerri-Anne taught me a huge amount when I moved over to companion care 5 years ago, and how we should be dealing with them more, because it certainly wasn't something that I'd appreciated as a vet, to the extent that they need this interaction and exposure to all these different sounds and smells and people and just different places. And Kerri-Anne certainly opened my eyes to all of that over the last kind of 5 years, of what an impact it can have over the longevity of your life and the dog's life, to make sure that they are a well-rounded individual. And you can really tell the difference between those puppies when they come in for their 6 month health check that have had this full exposure to lots of different sounds. They've had puppy training classes, they've done their initial training, and now they're going on and they're starting to do little bits of agility just to keep them mentally stimulated as well. And they come in and they're confident and they're happy to be touched and have their ears looked at and their paws checked, whereas those dogs that have just been walked twice a day or once a day but not had many other interactions other than maybe the animals in their own house or the people in their family, are still very nervy coming in and unsure of what's going on around them.
It's interesting, we'll talk to Kerri-Anne about some tips about how we can actually achieve these things, but I myself know how vital it is. Picking up a rescue cat, for instance, when she's 13 years old, you've got no idea what has gone on in the life before. But you know that you're going to run into old age issues, hopefully, of course, yeah, if everything goes well, as indeed we are doing with Molly Bloom at the moment. And it is absolutely vital that you can take your cat to the vet or your dog to the vet, and there will be things that need to be done. I mean, even down to, you know, with Molly Bloom, she can't sort of blunt her claws anymore.
Exactly.
Because she's an old lady, so they grow out, so she's got to have her claws clipped, which means you've got to be able to touch the paws. And of course, with a long hair cat, it's great to socialise because we groom her a lot.
Yes.
So actually, she's got no choice, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
We've got hands-on all the time, and although there's about a 1.5 minute window when we can hold her. After 1.5 minutes, there's an awful wriggle goes on. But nevertheless, when we first adopted her, that was about 10 seconds.
Yes.
And even in an older animal, as long as they feel secure. And of course, as far as sort of veterinary treatment is concerned, I imagine that your job must be a bit of a nightmare if you are presented with an animal that isn't touched from 1 week to another, and then you've got to start doing some things to it.
Absolutely, and it's in a lot of situations we end up finding that you may actually have to give an animal a sedation to be able to clean its ears out or something along those lines that you maybe wouldn't have had to have done in a dog that did have full interactions from a very young age, getting used to having their ears lifting up, just even wiping cotton wool over the inside of the ear, so not inside but just just over the top to get them used to that sensation of the ear canal being touched. The other classic one is teeth brushing. And it's one of these things that the sooner you can get a dog or a cat, I say cat, if you can find someone who can brush their cat's teeth, they're doing brilliantly.
I was going to say.
But, you know, there is no reason that you can't try and train a cat to brush their teeth. And the same with the dogs. The younger you can get your finger in their mouth, rubbing your finger along their gum line. So it's not even necessary that you need to get a toothbrush in there when they're 8 weeks old, but just used to being, you know, having this finger going around their gums, making sure that they know that it's a positive experience, that they get praised for it afterwards when they've been good. And it's all about positive reinforcement. And again, this is something Kerri-Anne very much taught me, that negative reinforcement does not work with animals. It is all about the positivity and encouragement and trying to get them to grow as an individual with positive, happy environments, rather than telling them off when they do something wrong. Just praise the stuff that they do well.
Exactly. Right then, Kerri-Anne, it's your turn now. Let's have a few tips. Let's take pussycats for a start, and imagine that a new kitten has just arrived in the house.
Yeah, I mean, I would say with cats, it's very important to socialise them, as with dogs, but with cats, we know that they tend to be a bit more complicated than dogs.
Tell me about it.
So it does tend to take a bit longer. You've got a brief window when cats are very young that they really need to be exposed to people, to being handled, to other animals, so that they get used to having a positive relationship and a positive association with people and touch. Usually they tend to say, if you're getting your kitten to meet new people, 10 minutes can be kind of the time that it would take for that to be counted as a positive interaction.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily going in and grabbing the cat or, you know, plonking them on your lap.
And I guess it's a fine line as well, because they don't always want to be carted about, do
exactly.
they?
Exactly. So it's, sometimes it's just sitting in the same presence and maybe playing, or just waiting for them to approach you and talking to them. But yeah, with cats, it's very important. And as Hayley was saying, I think it's something that sometimes people forget about with your cats, is getting them used to going in a carrier, to come to the vets, coming in the car, being groomed, as you said, and being touched and all those kind of things. Because usually with cats, we tend to see them once a year for their booster, unless there's something wrong. So people don't always take that time to get them used to it. But it's really easy to do. I would say have a carrier out in the house most of the time, have a nice bed in it, throw treats in it, so the cats just get used to
it.
They
make friends
around.
With it.
Exactly,
basically.
And it's another comfy place for them to sit. We know they like to go and have hidey holes, but it also means you don't have that scenario when you get the cat box out because you've got a vet appointment and the cat does a bunk and runs off and oh no, sorry, we can't take the cat in. So I would say spending lots of time with your cats and your older cats as well, getting them used to things like that is really important.
We're very lucky because we go to the West Country a lot, and our cat actually travels with us. And a lot of people think that's a rare thing, but I gather that it's more common these days when people don't want to put cats into catteries and that sort of thing. It's useful to just occasionally pop that cat carrier in and drive it around the block?
Yeah, I would say so. I think you need to take the time and make sure that your cat's not getting stressed in the box first, so do it quite gradually. We know that cats like to take their time, and then yeah, absolutely get them in the car, turn the car on, get them out again, make sure they've got plenty of treats and nice things going on. Maybe someone sitting in the back seat with them the first few times, just talking to them, that kind of thing. And also having some nice classical music on your car radio, because that
our cat likes
help.
The Archer's Omnibus.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
She likes to hear speaking.
Absolutely. But they do tend to say that kind of either talking or nice
reassurance.
Music. It really helps them, yeah.
We're talking babies here.
Yeah.
Because anyone that's raised a baby, the advice is very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do see a lot of similarities between kind of cats and puppies and the way that we raise them. And as Hayley said, a lot of positive experiences and just getting them used to the world. I think a lot of the time people get fixated on my puppies being really naughty and doing naughty things, and actually they're not. They're just showing normal, typical puppy behaviour, but they've got to learn to live with us in a human environment, and it's up to us to guide them through that process and show them what we want. you know, what we expect of them and how we want them to behave.
We have sort of, over the centuries, we have plucked these animals out of the wild. We have domesticated them. We've sort of given them almost a human stance, certainly as far as Molly Bloom is concerned. She is the third member of the family.
Yeah.
We have done all of that. Therefore, anyone listening thinking, oh, I don't know, that sounds like a lot of work, we owe it to them.
Absolutely. And we expect them to really cope with a lot of things. And, you know, they have a completely alien lifestyle these days. You know, they live in houses, they get taken out for walks a lot of the time on the lead, they have to cope with traffic and all this kind of thing. So yeah, it's really important to put that time in when they're young. Even if you're getting a rescue dog that's slightly older, it's really important to go through that process. But getting them used to, you know, people, different age groups, you know, buses, cars, trains. And I think one of my favourite analogies is literally taking your puppy to a coffee shop, sitting outside a coffee shop and just letting them watch the world go by, because that's really important.
Because you've got traffic, people, noise.
Exactly. And, you know, they can really experience what's going on. It's not about plonking them in a dog park with 100 other dogs that are going to come and run and overwhelm them. It's just being able to sit and observe life and then take it at their own pace. And do it gradually is really important.
She's good, isn't she?
She is.
She's got me sucked in straight away. I'm thinking, right, I'll get Molly trained up very, very quickly indeed. Hayley, how important is this? I mean, just out of interest, how many patients do you refer to Kerri-Anne when you take one look at the dog or the cat and go, oh my goodness me?
More than we'd like to be honest. And a lot of them, unfortunately, it does tend to be because we are starting to see aggression. And this is the problem, that a frustrated dog, a frustrated cat, the way that these behavioural issues come out is often aggression towards the owners, and there can be triggers.
And to the vet.
And to the vet, absolutely. And unfortunately, bypassers, dog walkers, other dogs. And this is certainly the problem, that if you have a frustrated dog, they can become aggressive and they can take it out at any time, that we won't necessarily know what that trigger is that's going to set them off. And that's where Kerri-Anne often comes in, is trying to figure out what is it that is really distressing them? What is it that we have to do to work with them to try and make them more comfortable? Is it a pain-related thing? Because there are certainly cases where there are the painful incidents that can cause animals to become aggressive. But is there a behavioural side of it as well? Is there something going on that is triggering them at home, that either they're expecting to be uncomfortable when they hear a certain stimuli or something like that? So yeah, we do, and I think it's something that, especially working with Kerri-Anne over the last 5 years or so, more and more I am doing so. So I think as a vet, my eyes have certainly been opened more to the behavioural side of things, having worked with someone with the experience that Kerri-Anne has, and to be able then to offer that to our clients and say, look, we can try and manage your behavioural issues. You know, we do have people that we can refer you off to be able to look at and manage these side of things for you is very important.
I guess a big thing is also the body language of the owners. And I mean, not to be too specific about some of your clients, but essentially, you must, as a vet, when somebody comes to you for the first time, you must have to do an awful lot of on-the-spot assessing, not just of the animal that's put in front of you that needs your help, but of the person or the people that are bringing that animal in, to make some sort of judgment about how to proceed with treatments and everything else. It's a psychological minefield.
Absolutely. And it's exactly the same, not just with behavioural issues, but with any medical issues, is always trying to find that kind of happy ground for both what we feel is best medically or behaviourally for the animal, but also what is best for the clients as well and for the humans involved. Because it's not always just about the animals, it's about working a lifestyle and managing the whole picture, not just being completely fixed in our, this is the way that it has to be to fix it and you just have to deal with it. You know, we have to find ways to work with the humans, with the animals, to just get the big picture sorted.
Well, when we brought Molly Bloom in the other day for her checkup, you told me this lovely story, and won't mention any names, about how you had an in-house cat for a few weeks, principally to be because the owner was having problems with medication.
Absolutely. Fantastic owner, I have to say that. But the cat just had decided that it had enough and didn't want medications anymore, so would try and run away from her.
And that's so life-threatening, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, if you can't get medications into animals and things are getting worse, so we decided to have this little guy in for a bit, and I have to say, my office is a sadder place.
You were heartbroken,
now
weren't you?
Oh, I'm still devastated, to be honest. It's just not quite the same without him. So he's going to have to come for visits and checkups because we've all got far too attached to him. But yeah, the practice just seems so quiet without him. But absolutely, that is a situation where, you know, we have to look at the behavioural side of things for the cat, because it was obviously severely affecting him that we were having to make who he considered his mum, basically, force medications into him. And so he was saying, well, I'm going to take myself away because I can't cope with this. And so now, hopefully, we've got him in a situation where he's doing really well and we've got him back home. And so hopefully he won't be feeling those sort of, you know, sense of wanting to escape and get away.
That brought back to me, not a great memory of our cat before Molly Bloom, Tilly, when she became very, very ill towards the end of her life and needed a lot of medications and things. And there came a point where I was chasing her around the garden, this little fluffy long-haired pussycat, trying to get this life-saving pill into her. And it was at that point that I realised that the last few days, or whatever it was going to be, I wasn't going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because it got to the stage where I thought, we absolutely love this animal to death, but her last remaining memory of us is going to be us charging round trying to get this stuff into her.
Absolutely.
When actually we knew we were on a wicket to nowhere. We knew that the time was short. And that relationship, it's really important that that relationship doesn't break down. I don't know whether you agree with that, Kerri-Anne.
I completely agree, absolutely. I think building a relationship of trust with your pet, whether it's a cat or a dog or any other type of pet, is really important. Mm. And they have to, you know, have faith in you. So yeah, it can be quite difficult. And the only thing we can kind of talk about is preventing things like that. So getting them used to being handled, being touched. I mean, with my dogs, I teach them that, you know, I'm going to open their mouth and put something in. You know, we do it with sausage a lot of the time.
Obviously.
And then occasionally it's a worming tablet, but it's really trying to get them used to that and having faith in them. And I think that is something that we struggle with, you know, when owners have to bring their pets into us and, you know, we have to do something that the pet doesn't like or the owner has to continue. It can be quite difficult. But again, I run puppy classes and dog training classes, and we always talk about how a lot of the problems that Hayley and I see at the vets in terms of kind of animals not liking being handled is 100% preventable if you start early, you know, and you get them used to being handled, being touched, you know, being put onto a table, having a stethoscope on, having their nails cut. I mean, having nails cut can be extremely stressful, both for the
nurses everybody
and for the animals, absolutely. And if we can really try and make it a positive experience from really early on, it's so important. We often talk about kind of building emotional resilience into our pets, which is quite difficult.
Good.
Because, you know, I think sometimes we go to the other end of the spectrum where we love our pets so much, we don't want anything bad to happen to them. But actually, that's not real life. And they will have to come into the vets. They will have to have at least injections and you know, worming and flea treatment. So,
well, just a basic MOT, really.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
So, you know, and so it's kind of looking back at that, you know, people used to have dogs and used to get the dogs used to, you know, being pulled about by children and all those kind of things. And while we don't want to stress the animals out, we do want them to get used to what is life, what is your life going to be if you're going to have kids, you know, pulling on your tails and pulling on your ears. As much as we want to prevent that, we want dogs to be used to being handled, and the same with cats, so that, you know, they don't get into difficulty.
Yes, I mean, we do forget about these so-called wild animals that we domesticate can turn on a sixpence if things are in a situation that they can't cope, they're frightened, whatever it is.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of the time it is a fear response. Why we're seeing aggressive behaviour is that they might be in a situation that they're frightened of. They give us plenty of warning signals, but unfortunately, as people, we're not very good at picking them up. I mean,
thinking of Molly Bloom's thumping tail now.
Yes, exactly. You know, I think one of the big things is children and dogs, and, you know, children are used to people smiling and that being a lovely thing.
Yes.
If a dog is smiling at you and showing his teeth,
don't.
It is not a good good thing. So it's trying to get them, you know, to pick up on those signs. But yeah, if we're missing those signs, we can get into trouble. And often the dogs and the cats are the ones that then pay a price for that, which is really sad.
This is a wonderful topic. Don't forget, if anybody is having serious problems at home, not that we can fix them on air today, but we can sort of send you to see Kerri-Anne. 07919 070 490, our text, if you've got any sort of conversation as far as that's concerned. I can feel everybody's listening. They're on the edge of their seats this morning. We will check on what is happening on the A14 specifically at the moment, and then we will come back and talk some more. We have Hayley Baker and Kerri-Anne Hannigan in the studio this morning talking, handling your pets properly. And with respect, I think that's a good word to use. Well, we're in great conversation this morning because we have Hayley Baker, our 105 vet, and she's brought in, we've got to call her our 105 animal behaviourist now. She's made such a mark on the programme. Sue has got in contact with us, Kerri-Anne, and she said that she's finding it very, very interesting listening, particularly the tip that you gave about sitting with your dog outside a coffee shop and just letting the world go by. Sue and her partner are thinking of getting a pup. Any instant advice?
I would go, when you're looking for a puppy, really research the breeder or where the puppy's coming from, if it's coming from a rescue, and, you know, kind of do your research about the needs of the type of dog that you're going to get. And once you've got your puppy, I would be looking to really enrol in some really good puppy classes. The Association of Pet Dog Trainers, which I'm a member of, really make sure that the training that you're giving out is positive and really effective, and that's what I would be looking for, really.
I guess you can do the wrong things as well as the right things.
Yes, absolutely, and I think that's the difficulty, that a lot of kind of dog training and kind of advice around keeping dogs is quite controversial. There's a lot of conflicting advice, and people can get really bogged down, particularly looking on the internet and watching particular TV shows. So I would always say, if you're in a situation and someone asks you to do something with your dog and you're not comfortable with it, then say no, because you are your dog's advocate, and that's really important that you keep them safe. But yeah, just trying to be positive and, you know, trying to be as much of a, dare I say it, a parent figure rather than anything else is the best thing for your pet, really. You know, you can show them what you want, how you expect them to behave, and guide and teach them, you know, and boundaries and discipline do come into it, and having real boundaries is really important. I think we see a lot of dogs, you know, that come in at around 6-8 months, you know, and they're in adolescence, which can be quite a challenging time anyway. But if you haven't set up those boundaries from 8 weeks old when you've got that puppy, you can really run into difficulty at that age. So really doing your research and make sure that training is in place is really important.
Taking the dog in, of course, for the first injection is often the time when the vet meets the new member of the family for the first time. You might have had clients who've lost animals and then now they're having a new animal and things, Hayley. But that is the moment to ask for the advice, isn't it? That is the moment to say, right, this is our new puppy. You know, he's chewing the carpet, he's weeing all over the place, as puppies do, of course, because you've got to accept that if you're going to take a new person into the family. I don't know anybody that's ever taken on a young animal and hasn't had a few disasters here and there.
Absolutely.
And we're not changing our carpet until Molly Bloom shuffles off, that's for sure. Because it's the same at the other end of life too.
Absolutely.
But you just get used to it and go, whoops, that's it. I can't tell you how many cleaning materials we've got in our house these days, but there you go. But nevertheless, it is that first meeting with your vet and your new animal that's vital.
Absolutely, and it sets up a trust and a bonding going forward as well. And I think if we can give advice to try and make things more straightforward and clearer, I suppose, for pet owners, then we're doing our job. And we certainly, you know, will more than happily get Kerri-Anne to ring clients back if she's not there, or all of our other nurses have some experience in this sort of areas, and trying to encourage owners to look after their animals' mental welfare, make sure that they are as healthy as possible. That is our aim for these first vaccinations. So it's not just about them coming in and getting their jabs so they're protected. It's about setting them up.
This is why Kerri-Anne says research where the animal is coming from?
Absolutely.
Because obviously if it's coming from a kennel that is not really a very high-grade kennel, then those animals in their association already may have problems.
Absolutely. And the other thing that she means by that is that a lot of dogs have very different needs and different levels of mental stimulation versus physical kind of activities. And it's really important to know what your dog needs.
How many walks a day, this sort of thing.
Absolutely. Because, you know, you will get some breeds of dogs that actually just want to sleep all day, but if they're not around people, will get really distressed. So they don't need a lot of activity, but they need that
stimulation,
companionship. Mm. Whereas there are other dogs that just need to run and exercise and work all day long. And there are varieties within the same breeds as well. So you'll get working classes of the same breed of dogs. And it might be that the kennels that they've come from, they're actually working stock. And those ones are going to need a lot more putting into them than non-working stock, just because they're used to being exercised 8 hours a day. So if they get 2 half-an-hour walks a day, they're going to become very destructive very quickly because they're mentally and physically bored and they need that extra bit. So even if you've decided on the breed of dog you've got, so a spaniel, for example, you know, you can get different types of Springer Spaniels and Cocker Spaniels. And you need to be sure the kennel that you're getting them from, is this a normal pet-type Cocker Spaniel or is it a working
Cocker?
Or
is it a gun dog?
Exactly. Mm. And sometimes it can be very difficult to actually know without questioning in depth what's going on. And it's just very important to make sure you've got all of the information that you possibly can. And we have so many very, very good breeders nowadays who it is becoming a lot, I suppose, a lot better and being done so much more carefully, which is fantastic. And so if you have a breeder that doesn't want to speak to you about certain things or doesn't want to tell you information about the parents, that should set off alarm bells.
Sue has come back and said, thanks, Kerri-Anne, very good advice. So they're having to think about it. Sue, we want to hear about the new baby when it arrives. Definitely. That's good. As far as the breeds of dog are concerned, I mean, obviously, if you go and you rescue an animal, a dog or a cat, when you actually go to your rescue centre, if it's a good rescue centre, you will be filling forms in. You will be asked lots and lots of questions about how often you're there during the day, whether you have a full-time job, whether you have a garden, whether you have a penthouse flat with a flower pot, whatever it is, you do have to actually fill in detail so that the rescue centre can make a decision on your behalf, actually,
yes,
about whether that animal that they know better than you do would be happy in that environment. Is it going to be happy with other cats, other dogs, children, whatever it is? But when you're getting a puppy just like that, and it's not a rescue, then, of course, you don't have the benefit of having somebody sitting in front of you asking those questions. So you've got to ask yourself, haven't you?
Well, to be honest, Mandy, I would say if they're a good breeder, they should be quizzing you as much as a rescue centre, if not more. I know certainly when I got my first puppy, we went to the breeder and we were there for a long time and she had lots and lots of questions.
Because she cared.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, good breeders, they care about their dogs, they care about where the puppies are going. So if someone is ready to hand you a puppy without asking you any questions and will just palm it off to you in a car park, you really shouldn't
worry
be
about
taking
it.
Absolutely shouldn't be taking that puppy on, because we just don't know what environment they've come from, what their health is going to be like, and, you know, and how they've been raised, really.
And of course, another situation which regularly happens is that your cousin's dog's just had a load of puppies, and you think that you might be in the market for one of them, so you then go to that environment. That's quite a nice way of doing things, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is a really nice way of doing it. And again, it's just making sure that you're prepared for what that work is going to be when you get a new puppy. You know, it's easy to kind of go and look at a litter and think, oh, aren't they lovely, and let's have a puppy. But as Hayley said before, they can be really hard work, and it really is an investment. You have to invest your time and money and, you know, training and all those kind of things to make sure that you end up with a well-rounded dog that's going to be a lovely member of the family, not, you know, a troublesome burden.
And it's also difficult if you are faced with that. I mean, it was many, many years ago. I was faced with a bunch of kittens and had that wonderful opportunity to choose which one I wanted. And I have to say that I actually chose the one right at the bottom that everybody was bullying because they were all pounding in, and then there was this little nose sticking out right at the bottom. Oh. And I thought, well, that's going to be a lot happier with me.
Yeah.
And she was beautiful, in fact. But when you are choosing a puppy from a litter, what advice?
I wouldn't go for the puppy that's hiding in the corner.
No.
Often, if they're kind of taking a step back and they're maybe a bit nervous of strangers, it can be that you're going to get the nervous individual. But then saying that, that might suit certain people. You know, if you're a slightly older person and you're just looking for a companion, then it might suit you to have the nervous individual. Whereas if you're a young family with children, you
shrieking and shouting all the time. Yeah,
exactly. You want the puppy that's going to be able to cope.
Robust.
With that. Yeah. And again, a good breeder should be able to kind of look at your situation and look at the nature of the puppies and say, actually, this would be the puppy that would suit your lifestyle. But yeah, I would always try and pick the puppy maybe that's the run of the mill, you know, in terms of coming forward to say hello, isn't too bouncy, but, you know, wants to come and say hello rather than hide away.
And do you take the family along to meet it?
I mean, it sometimes depends on what the breeders would allow. If you're a parent and you're going and it's possibly a puppy for children, then I would probably go first without the children, get the lay of the land, meet the breeder and the dogs and the puppies and get an idea, and then maybe take the children back later, because I'm sure as soon as the children are involved and they pick a puppy...
Of course.
There's no chance of getting
backwards. You can't go back on that.
You don't want tears down the road, do you, really?
No, absolutely. So. But it's a lovely experience to do, to take children along and be involved, absolutely.
But it is very difficult at the same time when you are going to choose a puppy or a kitten, because your emotions completely take over at that point. And even as a vet, when I've gone to pick my two pups, absolutely everything goes out the window, because all you see are these beautiful fluffy little dogs.
Yeah.
And all you see are these beautiful little things that you are so excited about giving a home to. And as a vet, I struggled to go, okay, I need to sit down, I need to listen to these dogs' hearts, I need to have a feel of their legs, you know, I needed all the things that my training has told me I should be doing. Yet I've got these seven fluffy Labradoodle puppies in front of me and I just want to cuddle them all. So
thank goodness you've only got two of them.
Well, if I had my way, I'd have more, but I think my husband,
she needs watching at the practice, doesn't she? Hijacking other people's cats for a month.
Terrible.
She needs to be told occasionally, presumably.
Well, I mean, it's a veterinary hazard, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
You know, we work there. I think most of us have all got pets that have come either through the practice or, you know, we've got one of our nurses has got a one-legged cat that came in as a kitten. I've got a cat that was a hand rear that we got at a day old. So, yeah, I think we all tend to take them home.
Yeah, the litter of guinea pigs we have, those are dispersed throughout the staff well.
Yeah.
But it is all part of the job that, unfortunately, we do get a lot of situations where we have animals that are left in our hands, and as kind of people who care deeply about animals, it is very difficult to then not take them on. And I'm in a slightly easier position in the sense that my husband is allergic to animals.
That's convenient.
Then limit the
How
amount
on earth
that
did
I
you
can.
Get him? You didn't get him as a rescue, did you?
No.
I would love to talk about this for hours on end, and you're both going to have to come back together to talk a little bit more, because I think we've only just scratched the surface of this behaviour thing. But I think it's absolutely the nucleus of everything that you do with your pets. Huge thank you to Hayley Baker and to Kerri-Anne Hannigan for coming in and well, lighting our day, as you always do. I'm going to be coming to visit you in October.
Yep.
I'm going to spend a day at your practice to see exactly what goes on behind closed
Indeed.
Doors.
Indeed. We're looking forward to it.
Excellent.
We shall see you very soon. Here's Eric Clapton. I know Hayley likes Eric Clapton. I don't know. We have to find out what Kerri-Anne's music tastes are next time she's in.